I got to lead a group of people who were developing a recovery ministry at our church in Kentucky, and it was quite a crew that we had. We had a couple of recovering addicts, we had a therapist, we had a mom whose family had been torn apart because of addiction, and so she was really passionate about coming alongside of people dealing with the same things. But then we also had a guy named Roger who spent a few years in prison on drug trafficking charges, and he was the one that was actually like the lay leader of the ministry. We were a motley crew. It was awesome. I loved it. And leading up to the launch of the ministry, we decided that we wanted to have t-shirts made so that, you know, the leaders and people that were part of the group, it was kind of a sense of identity. We're in this together. And we had a lively discussion about what could be on the backs of those t-shirts. And we went around and around. And then finally, the guy who had just been released from prison was like, "How about this? I'm one of those people." And before I had a chance to move on to the next idea, the rest of the group was like, "Yes, that's it. That's what needs to be on the back of those shirts." They all knew what it was like to be labeled as one of those people. And they wanted to reframe what that phrase meant. Instead of a label that pushed them into the margins, and frankly, into the margins of the church as well as the society, they wanted to be one of those people who were honest about their hurts, their hang-ups, their habits. They wanted to be one of those people who acknowledged and fell on their need for Jesus. And after sitting on it for a little while, I thought, man, I want to be one of those people too. And whether I want to admit it or not, I am one of those people. I am one of those people who has a hurt deep in my heart that every time it comes up, I have to try to bring healing to it again. And I'm finding I cannot do it on my own. I am one of those people who has hang-ups that I cannot get over on my own strength and power. I am one of those people that has habits that I fall back into when I don't want to, that have ruts that I feel like I am stuck in and I cannot get out of on my own. I am one of those people who is in constant need of Jesus. My guess is that I'm not the only one in here. In fact, if you would be so vulnerable today, would you raise your hand if you're one of those people too? Every single one of us. We have moments, we have months, we have maybe even years where we struggle with our hurts, our hang-ups, and our habits. We are in need of hope and healing that only Jesus can provide. We go through a time in life that leaves a wound. We feel betrayed, we feel lonely, we feel like we are emotionally at risk in these moments when we are more susceptible to anxiety or to fears or depression or emotional distress. We feel sad and we don't know why. We feel overwhelmed by worries and fears and anxiety. Every single one of us, we can sometimes get into this place where the words that we speak to ourselves about ourselves become what my friend Claudia and others have referred to as the bully roommate. It's this person that like lives in our head that sounds a lot like us, but they are mean, they're cruel, they're discouraging. They beat us up. And oftentimes when we are in those spaces, when we're in that headspace, what we do is we turn to our habits to provide comfort or escape from the reality of the emotional pain that we're feeling. We're all one of those people. No one is exempt from these things. The question is, will you have the courage to admit it to yourself? Will you have the courage to admit it to the Lord or to someone that loves you? Will you have the courage to confess your need for Jesus and fall on His grace in your life? Will you be one of those people that allows Jesus to meet you in your pain and help you find hope and healing? In our text today, we find two sisters who are grieving. They are more than just a little bit emotionally at risk. Their brother has just died, and even though they had sent for Jesus, he did not come, which I think just maybe added to their pain. And when Jesus finally does get there, he is immediately met with all of the emotions that you would expect to find at a funeral, maybe of someone that you love. Martha runs out to Jesus and greeted him with these words in chapter 11, verse 21. She says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And I imagine that Martha running out to Jesus, like she's not even waiting for him to get to where she was. She goes to him. She is angry. She is frustrated. She is disappointed. She had sent for Jesus to come days earlier when he still could have done something to heal her brother, but Jesus didn't come. And she felt let down, wondering, does Jesus care as much as I thought that he did? And then you have the other sister. And she's not angry. She is heartbroken. Verse 33 says that she's weeping. And it says, when Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet. And notice, she said the same thing, but I think with different words. Martha's angry. Mary's sad. And she says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." So you have these two sisters feeling the same emotion of grief expressing itself in different ways. Emotions that I imagine many of us are familiar with. And notice that Jesus does not chastise them for an apparent lack of faith. Jesus does not minimize what they are feeling. Jesus meets them right in the midst of their pain. And we see one of his most human moments. Verse 35 says, Jesus wept. Jesus wept over the death of a friend. He wept over the agony that they were feeling and the pain that it caused. He wept over the brokenness and the pain of this world that every single one of us experience. Jesus weeps with us. And yet, right in the middle of all of these emotions, Martha makes a profound statement. She is angry that Jesus wasn't there, but then she ends with this statement of faith. She says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died, but I know that even now, God will give you whatever you asked." And Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." And Martha answers, "Yeah, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." She's like, "Yeah, I know that eventually he will rise again, but that doesn't do anything about the pain and the anger that I'm experiencing right now." But then Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life." Jesus steps into this emotionally charged scene and he brings resurrection life. He raises Lazarus from the dead and brings hope and healing to those who are feeling this deep sense of pain and agony and loss. And what Jesus did then, he continues to do today. Jesus meets us in our emotions and brings resurrection life to us. When we open ourselves up and we are honest, which I don't think that he can do anything until we get to that point. I don't think that the Spirit can do anything in our life to bring hope and healing if we just continue to wear a mask and pretend like we're okay and it's okay and everything's okay. But it's when we remove that and we have the vulnerability and the honesty with ourselves and him to say, "No, it's not okay, I'm not okay." He comes in and Jesus continues to bring resurrection life to our life today. And so what can we do when we feel emotionally at risk? What can we do if maybe someone that we love is going through something? I want to invite the smartest person I know to talk about these things and more, Claudia Mitchell, up to the stage to join me. Will you give Claudia a hand? So Claudia, based on that response, I may not be the only person that believes that you are the smartest person in the room to talk about these things. So, you know, you you deal in this world a lot. I mean, you do a lot of counseling. I even joked that the more natural position for us would be you in a chair and me on a couch this morning, because you've kind of been a counselor even to me in the 6.5 years that I've been blessed to know you. But in the counseling room, what is it that you are finding people experience most these days?
Oh boy, I know this won't be a surprise to you or to the family here, that research is showing 1 out of 3 people is struggling with anxiety or depression.
One out of three.
I'm seeing those emotions that come along with that in all generations, particularly Generation Z, which I think the generationalists are calling it between the ages of maybe...
Do you have your pack? Could you pull that out? I don't know if it's getting kind of cutting in and out there.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
You
just set that on.
Is that better?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll see.
All right, right there. About the ages of maybe 7 or 8 to 24 to 26, that generation, they're the largest generation in American history, the most entitled, the most empowered, and also the most anxious. We're also seeing it in our children.
Yeah.
Dr. John Gottman has recently been called the most influential psychologist of this decade. And he says he can tell the stress of children by getting to know their parents.
Yeah, because they get it from somewhere.
Absolutely.
I thought about that old, it was 1987, because I had to look it up, that commercial, you know, the parents who have drugs have kids. I learned it from watching you. I think is the same thing. I learned it from watching you. They're seeing parents who are stressed out and living maxed out and in the margins.
Yeah,
and they pick it from us. Mm-hmm. They pick it up from us. Yeah. So as I have sometimes very publicly dealt with my own junk and mental and emotional health.
Thank you for being vulnerable with that.
Well,
you'll never
I don't know that I really had a choice, but it just kind of came. Thank you. But what I'm discovering is that this battle, it doesn't just take place on like one front. Like it is coming at us from multiple different sides. And so we oftentimes, especially in the church, we talk about it from like the spiritual aspect of it. But that is absolutely true.
Sure.
But I also have found like this, it comes at us from an emotional front and from a physical front. Mm-hmm. And if we only try to fight this battle on one of those fronts, we're leaving ourselves open and vulnerable to the other ones. And so if we only say, man, I'm just going to pray more and I'm going to read more scripture, we're leaving ourselves up open to the emotional pathway where the enemy can come in, the physical pathway.
Absolutely.
And so I want to talk specifically. You said 1/3 of us in here this morning are dealing with anxiety and depression. What are some ways that we can counterattack, go on the offense
in the physical realm? Way. Well, you know, I was recently asked to talk to some athletes from BNL. And I was expecting a small group, and I got a room full of football and basketball players. And I was a little anxious, not to be true. But they wanted to know the same question you ask. Yeah. How do we handle the anxiety and depression in our lives? And so I started by explaining to them, reviewing, probably a review for a lot of you, what's happening in the body when anxiety and depression hits us from sort of out of nowhere. Yeah. It's the sympathetic nervous system is like the security guard of our brain, an amazing brain we have.
Yeah.
And the security guard is constantly protecting us and looking for threats. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, the security guard doesn't recognize a threat that is not real. For example, a real threat, like a bear coming at us or an oncoming car, but a perceived threat, like a test that we have coming up, or a really harsh text, or we find out our child is in trouble. Our security guard senses our emotions and it blows up in our brain and it sends adrenaline and cortisol to get us ready to fight, to flight, or to freeze. And when that happens.
Yeah, and we're living in a time where that perceived threat is constantly in front of us. And so, yeah, it's always saying, beware, beware, beware.
I know. I think I was talking to you about this, and I remember saying, it feels to me like a smoke alarm is going off constantly. And the sympathetic nervous system can't keep up. So finally, the brain just kind of closes down. And that's when depression sets in. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, my favorite part of the nervous system is the parasympathetic nervous system, and we can shorten that to PNS. And that part of the nervous system, if you watch Inside Out, and if you haven't, the Disney movie Inside Out, you've got to see it. But there's a character in there who says, we're okay. Hey, everybody, we're okay. Calm down, everybody. That's how I think of the parasympathetic nervous system. Mm-hmm. It's saying, it's like a parachute, and it relaxes our bodies, our minds, takes care of those chemicals.
Yeah.
And I found some researched ways to activate the parasympathetic nervous system. I'm going to ask you all to do them with me. And they may seem a little wacky, but I want to tell you that the football players, who are now some of my good friends from BNL, have assured me they work. So the first one is to rub your thighs like this. So everybody just give it a try.
And put your feet on the floor.
Yes. Yeah. Put your feet, get comfortable.
I don't know how often you do with your husband Ken, but as you started talking about this, I saw him uncross his, like he was preparing to do this.
Poor
yes.
Ken. You know, Ken won't allow me to say this. Tell me how you're feeling. Rubbing our thighs activates the parasympathetic nervous system. Taking a deep breath. Let's do that right now. Oh. Let it out. Did you feel that fresh boost of oxygen to your brain? Your brain loves that.
Yeah.
Another way my football friends, have called this the two-finger lip circle. If you take your two
Such
fingers...
Such a creative name.
Your two fingers, and you circle your lip, there are parasympathetic little cells on your lip. It activates that part of the brain that's going to calm you down. One of my friends raised his hand. He said, hey, Claudia, is that why we vape? And I said, what a great observation. Of course it is. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why we give baby pacifiers and why we slap on that chapstick, because that will activate the parasympathetic nervous system.
I was talking to somebody about that between services today, the 8 o'clock and 9:30, and he said, you know, whenever I'm thinking, I find myself just doing this, and I think, isn't that like a tell that somebody is lying as well?
Yeah.
They're like touching their face.
Yeah.
They're probably, they don't realize, like our body does things that maybe we don't even know that it's doing, but it knows is going to help it.
Right.
Yeah. So physically, what about spiritually? How can someone fight this battle spiritually?
Spiritually, I think that I just absolutely love the beginning of our time together this morning, Sean. And I love the idea of Mary and Martha and their different reactions to crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would be more like Martha. Martha was mad and she was crying out, why and what? Why is this happening and where were you?
Yeah.
And I think we've all felt that. And I think being able to cry out when we're spiritually hurting to God and to our friends and to each other as a family, and to say why God is perfectly okay spiritually. God can take it. Even his own son cried out to him on the cross, Father, why?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the word lament.
Yeah. Yeah. Lament is one of those things I think that we have gotten out of the habit of practicing, where there is that why, that question. It's, you know, I think of Job, though he slay me, you know, Job went through so much. It is like an acknowledgement of the pain that we feel. But then in biblical lament, it turns to a statement of faith. And so for Job, it was, though he slay me, yet I will trust in him. It's reminding ourselves of his faithfulness, of his goodness, even in the pain that maybe we're feeling in the moment. But we have to be honest about that.
We do.
How about emotionally? What are some ways emotionally that we can fight
emotionally,
the battle?
Emotionally, you know, it's so important to name the emotion that you're feeling, to say it out loud. The research shows that the spoken word is 10 times more powerful than just thinking it. Mm. So when you speak it out, you're taking some of the power away from that emotion, those hard ones.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus and God, I guess, could have thought the world into existence, but he spoke it.
Yeah.
Words are powerful. So speaking it out first.
Yeah.
The second one would be when you speak it out, to understand that you're actually taming that emotion and practice some parasympathetic with it.
Yeah. A little over a year ago, Josh Reynolds was preaching, and he talked about three different questions that we can ask those things
Absolutely.
That we're feeling. Is
yes.
it true? Is it helpful? Is it kind? And
Absolutely.
So to once you would name that emotion that we're feeling, then to like ask those questions of it. Is this true?
Yeah.
Is it helpful? Is it going to actually gain anything in my life? And is it kind?
I love that. You know,
things.
You mentioned the bully roommate. Mine was going off on the way here. You know, I don't know if I know anything. I don't know if I'm wearing the right thing. I don't know my bully roommate. If you have a bully roommate, if you understand that concept of those negative thoughts, 80,000 thoughts we have a day, 60% of them are usually negative. If you have a bully roommate in your brain, just say me too.
Me too.
I see we're not the only ones.
We're not.
So
it.
Those three questions will shut up that bully roommate.
Yeah. I want to spend just a little bit of time in talking about where medication falls into this.
Okay.
It's a question I'm asked a lot, and it's a question I think thoughtful Christians want to know. Shouldn't I just be able to pray this away? Shouldn't more scripture memorization? And I always say, you know, if you broke your arm, you wouldn't just try to pray the pain away. God has given us common grace in medical practices in the medical field to be able to know how to reset that arm and to help it heal faster. And I think in a lot of ways, that's the same realm of medication for our mental and emotional health. God has gifted us, humanity, with this grace to be able to help us fight this battle.
Absolutely, to manage the physiological as well as the psychological that's going on. We take insulin if we have diabetes.
Yeah.
So, yes.
So if you have a friend or someone that you love who is struggling through some of these things, I know a lot of times it's hard to know what to do. What recommendations would you have about how to come alongside of someone that you love?
Well, you know, I feel like we're all kids, all of us. Some of us are just bigger than others, and sometimes our temper tantrums can be bigger. But this video of a mom training her child on how to handle her emotions when she's been hurt, I think is good for all of us kids.
Yeah. Let's check this out.
Take another deep breath. Take a deep breath. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay, look at mommy. Look at mama.
My head.
I know you smashed your fingers in the door, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay, take a deep breath. Okay, are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay, look at mommy. Say, I'm okay.
I will get it.
Say, I'm strong.
I'm strong.
Say, I'm beautiful.
I'm faithful.
Say, I'm loved.
I love.
Say, I'm worthy.
I'm ready.
You're beautiful.
Thank you, Mom.
You're welcome, baby. I love you.
I love you, Mom.
Aw, isn't that the sweetest thing? I love that. So I think that mom demonstrated for us, like, really, that says it all, how we can come alongside of people when they are in that space.
Absolutely. And since one out of the three of us is there right now, let's just do it.
Yeah.
So let's all take a deep breath. And repeat after me. I'm okay.
I'm okay.
I'm loved.
I'm loved.
I'm safe.
I'm safe.
I'm okay.
I'm okay.
Look at the person next to you and say, we're okay.
We're okay. And you're booyful. That's good, because that's usually just what somebody needs. They just need that reminder, that alarm is going off, and they need someone to maybe help them activate. You know, if it's a spouse or someone that you're close to, appropriate touch, just maybe rubbing on the back, rubbing on that thigh, you know, helping them identify that, saying, hey, breathe, evaluating with them. Is it true? Is it kind? Is it helpful?
Yes.
All of those things. Yeah. So for the one of three, the 33% of us, or maybe more, that are experiencing some hurt, some hang-ups, maybe habits right now, in need of hope and healing, what would you say to us?
Oh, I would say please don't leave here without a next step. If you need to talk with someone, there are people here, always here to pray with you. I'm not in a hurry today. I'll be around if I can help in any way. If your next step is to talk to a counselor or talk to your doctor about medication, but leave here with the next step. And we, Sean and I, both prayed that you'll leave here feeling less anxious than you came in because you've been with the family and you've been present with God. Dallas Willard says that knowing God is with us is the basis of all physical, mental, and spiritual health. It makes this world a perfectly safe place to be. So bless you all and hope you leave there. And also, I think you have an amazing plan to help this this generation right now deal with the smoke alarm.
I'm excited to share a little bit more about that.
I'm excited to hear it.
Claudia, thank you for joining us. Love you. Amazing. Amazing. Yeah, you have heard us say in this series, and we're going to continue to say it in multiple different ways, but our vision as a church is to unleash the church with the love of Jesus, to go out and make an eternal difference in the lives of at-risk people, to go to those that Jesus moved towards, to raise up and send out followers of Jesus who move into the margins and serve the way that Jesus served. And so for the emotionally at risk, we say we will go to any length necessary to give hope to the hopeless and freedom to those held captive by their hurts, hang-ups, and habits. And if I'm honest right now, while we are doing a lot within this realm, this statement is more aspirational than it is reality. It's what we want to do. It's who we want to be. We want to mobilize the church to come alongside people who are hurting emotionally and suffering the effects of it. We want to mobilize the church to make a difference in one of the greatest crises threatening our society today, mental and emotional health. And so to do this, we are working on taking our counseling ministry to the next level. We already have incredible counselors who come alongside of families, who come alongside of individuals, and provide that shot of hope that they need. But we want to up our game, and we already have people that are in place planning how we can do that, putting strategies together that we're going to be executing on this next year. Personally, I have a vision, and I haven't shared it with many people, but I have a vision for us to launch a nonprofit counseling center here in Bloomington that is also a training center for Christian counseling students looking for a place to do their residencies. If we develop something like that, I think that we will be able to offer high-quality, low-cost services for individuals and family in our community. If somebody came up to me right now and said, Sean, my checkbook's open, I'm writing a check for $1 million, what would you do? That's it. That is it. It's where I know that God is leading us to engage in this battle. It's also a way that we, through a residency program, we would be able to raise up and send out kingdom workers to fight this battle, not just here in Bloomington, but across the country. And there's currently a group of people, again, right now, dreaming about what that could look like. Jesus moved into the margins to meet people where they were. And as a church, we want to do the same thing. We want to help people find hope and healing from their hurts, hang-ups, and habits. Imagine the difference that we could see in our community if a church like Sherwood Oaks stepped up and went out to make an eternal difference in the lives of at-risk people, if we partnered with organizations in our community and filled the gaps when needed, if we focused our resources on tackling tough issues that our communities face, issues like homelessness and poverty, like single parents, like addictions, if we used our gifts to be the hands and feet of Jesus beyond the walls of our church. That's the church I want to be a part of. And it's the church I believe that Jesus is building here, a church that moves to those in the margins because it's the ones that Jesus moved towards. He moved towards people like me, and he moved towards people like you, and then he sent us out to do the same. The Apostle Paul says in Romans 5:8 that God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He did not wait for us to get our act together. He did not wait for us to arrive at a place of perfection. No, Jesus came for us while we were still sinners, gave his life for us. While we were still separated from God, Jesus moved towards us, towards the cross, so that we could be forgiven and set free. Maggie's going to help us remember and celebrate that now. And as she comes up, let me pray. God, thank you for your grace and your goodness. Jesus, for the way that you meet us in our pain, even today. We love you. In Jesus' name.
Thank you for listening to this message from Sherwood Oaks Christian Church. Did you know you can watch all of our video content, both current and past, on our YouTube channel? Visit youtube.com/Sherwood Oaks to watch messages, series, and complete worship services.